Blog Talk Radio.
Now.
And welcome to the next round on the Matchbox Boxing Radio Network in association with the Leave It in the Ring Radio Network of David Double D Dwyneth. This is Steve Canine Kim, joined as always by my partner from up north in the Golden Gate City, Mr. Golden Gate, Gabriel Montoya. Gabriel, good Monday to you.
Good Monday to you, man. How you doing?
Well, we have a couple of new announcements. As of last week, we are now finally on iTunes. Ask and ye shall receive. And this start time,
yes,
which is 7 p.m. Eastern Time, 4 p.m. Pacific, we are making that a permanent staple of the show. And you're not gonna believe this, Gabe, and neither is anyone else. I actually got an email of thank you from the NFL commissioner, Roger Goodell, for giving Monday Night Football the full spotlight. Wasn't that a magnanimous gesture, Gabriel?
It really was. We were kind of cutting into his action, and he just, you know, he didn't want to say anything, but he's very relieved. I'm glad he sent it.
Yeah, and the higher-ups at ESPN are also very thrilled with this new start time. We're going to be going from 7 for 90 minutes from that point on. So it's a perfect segue to Monday Night Football. Very good game tonight, the Carolina Panthers and the New England Patriots. But let's get down to business. Folks, if you want to call, we will take your calls in about 15 to 20 minutes. The number, 347-215-7598. Once again, 347-215-7598. If you want to tweet us a question or a comment, you could do so at Steve Max Boxing, at Gabriel underscore Montoya, and at Max Boxing Live. Gabe, let's get started with round number one. It's the return of the Pac-Man from the Cotai Arena in Macau. Welterweights in action. Manny Pacquiao, with a record of 54-5-2, 38 knockouts, takes on Brandon Bam Bam Rios, who comes in with a ledger of 31-1-1. Gabe, we've been talking about this for several months. Are you sticking by your prediction of Brandon Rios effectively ending the career of the Pac-Man?
Absolutely not.
Really? Do tell.
I like what I've seen and heard of Manny. Both people around the camp that have seen him spar, watching him a little bit on 24/7, just so I could get, you know, some eyes on how he looks. You can't really tell a lot from a reality show that's highly edited, but I like his attitude about the loss. I think, I mean, the main thing that you tweeted today is, can he still take a punch? And from what I understand, he's taken some right hands. And you know as well as I do how well he, probably better, how well he spars and how he spars, where he lets people kind of wail on him a little bit. It seems like those habits have not changed. He still feels confident and durable. He got caught by a punch he didn't see coming, thrown by an expert while being pitched forward, while, you know, kind of stepping on his foot. It was a perfect, terrible storm for Manny Pacquiao with Marquez. He got knocked out. It happens. He'd been knocked out twice before. I think that Rios is a smaller, younger version of Antonio Margarito, and I think that's exactly how Manny Pacquiao is going to treat him.
Gabe, the question that I have is very simple. When Manny Pacquiao gets hit right on the chops, right on the mustache, he's either going to clench his fist, bang his gloves together, smile, and start hopping on his toes like he usually does and ask for the fight to come on, or he's going to shatter in a million pieces. And I think that reaction will tell us what's going to happen on Saturday night in Macau. I think Brandon Rios, I think he's at a disadvantage in one sense. I think that Manny Pacquiao is more acclimated to the welterweight level. But also this,
yes,
if Manny Pacquiao is not physically damaged to a point where he's no longer functioning as a world-class practitioner, Gabe, I look at foot speed, hand speed, and the ability to throw punches on the fly and work at angles. But again, it all goes back to what do we know about Manny Pacquiao. And Gabe, I ask you the question that I've asked other people like Larry Merchant. Outside of Tommy Hearns obliterating Roberto Duran, sending him face first to the canvas, can you name me another all-time elite type of fighter that has taken that type of knockout that actually had a good, solid, functional career moving forward?
Lewis, I guess, would be my first guess.
Did
he get knocked out by Max Schmeling and then he came
back?
Yeah,
but I'm just talking about the type of knockout, Gabe, where literally, and I was there in the arena, Gabe, when Manny Pacquiao went down and he was frozen stiff, I mean, you could have put a chalk line over his body with a police tape around the ring ropes, and you would have had almost a homicide scene. I mean, that was a scary knockout, about as scary as I've seen, Gabe.
That's scarier than the Duran knockout, actually, because he did kind of get up soon after that. He wasn't just laying there still. It is, you know, and even Roy Jones, who got knocked out by Tarver, didn't get knocked out that way, you know. And my whole premise of my original pick of Rios was that this was kind of a Glenn Johnson-like opponent, where everybody thought it was the right style for Roy, but he kind of banged on him and banged on him until finally he hit the right spot, and Roy just went unconscious the way Manny Pacquiao did. But that wasn't really – I took a long view at that theory, and Roy didn't look good in the first Tarver fight. He looked like something was wrong. And then going into the fight, there was only, I think, 7 punches landed by Tarver, not many thrown by Roy Jones. That fight had not really begun, and he wasn't looking that great either. Pacquiao was looking great before he got knocked out. So, yeah, I mean, the question is, I mean, he's been through a whole sparring session.
Yeah, Gabe, here's
Does he have lingering brain damage? I don't know, you know. But he looks fine. He looked fine until he got knocked out. So,
Gabe, not only did he look fine, being there, and I was at every single round of the Pacquiao-Marquez rivalry, that's the best I had seen Manny Pacquiao against Marquez since the first round of their first fight back in 2004. He was beating him to the punch. He looked very fluid. Punches were coming off very fast, very hard. The combinations were there. He was about 6 or 7 minutes from stopping Marquez and putting a definitive end, at least on his ledger, to that rivalry. Now, I'll say this, and I've written it before. I thought that's the best version of Manny Pacquiao that we had seen since November of 2009 when he took care of Miguel Cotto. I think there's a sense of desperation. And again, we don't know much. There's been very few people that have actually gone up to Gensang. And when we look at 24/7, that is a prepackaged infomercial. So we have to take that with a grain of salt. But you're right. From what little we've heard and seen, the signs look promising. And I just wonder, does Brandon Rios have the ability to shift gears and to really make Manny Pacquiao commit to punches in a way that he can lay traps? Remember, Gabe, Juan Manuel Marquez is the consummate counterpuncher. He's a guy that thinks 2 or 3 steps ahead like a chess player. Well, when it comes to Brandon Rios, Gabe, he plays checkers every single time. This style might be built to order, and Gabe, let's face it, Top Rank knows what they're doing. There's a reason why they made this fight.
That's a reason Brandon Rios exists within that Top Rank universe, is to be built towards a guy like this. It's the same reason that Margarito existed. I mean, for all the fact that he had like 8 title defenses as a WBO welterweight, he was there to be built towards Floyd Mayweather, so that one day Floyd would have his Mexican rivalry, a guy that had fans and would bring something to the party in a losing effort, probably, to Floyd Mayweather. That was the whole point of it, and that's just like promoting 101. And Bob has actually written much of that book. Now, Rios is exactly in that mold. I mean, as good as he is, as passionate, as fun as he is, I mean, he's kind of the perfect promotional tool. You can feed him to the A side, and he's very quotable. He's going to sell himself. If he wins, so much the better, because he's kind of a likable personality. But, you know, generally, guys like him going up against an athletic sharpshooter like Pacquiao are being sent there to lose. So, and he's there for the first time as a 47. What's his power going to be like? It wasn't snappy and devastating in his last fight against Mike Alvarado. Maybe he took him lightly. You know, I think Robert Garcia even talked about that he was only looking at the knockout and they couldn't quite focus him in. But still, he's not a welterweight. He's not fought at this weight. He was never the fastest fighter in the world. He relies on you to close quarters and mano-a-mano with him. Pacquiao is not going to do that in this fight. I expect a really disciplined boxing Pacquiao that's now even going to be even more disciplined and not take just that much fewer risks. I just don't see Rios winning.
You know what? You've made your choice. You have flip-flopped. You've done the Mitt Romney. I was always unsure about this fight. I'm going to take a hunch and say that Manny Pacquiao is still a reasonable physical and psychological facsimile of himself. I like what I'm hearing. Again, all of this is speculation. Until I see him busted right in the face, we don't know a damn thing. Part of our job is to make predictions. I like Manny Pacquiao to beat Brandon Rios, and I think he might even stop him between rounds 8, 9, and 10, Gabe. You think he stops him, or do you think he settles for a decision?
I think he stops him around 8, 9, or 10. I think, yeah, would say so. It's going to be a TKO. I don't think he ices him. I think he beats on him and wears him down, and there's a succession of punches, and it gets stopped in the corner.
Mm-hmm. Gabe, looking at this undercard, it's not exactly revenge the rematches. Evgeny Gradovich against Billy Dibb, a rematch for the IBF featherweight title. Heavyweight prospect Andy Ruiz has a good upside, takes on Tor Hammer. And the future, Felix Verdejo, has also been added to this card. Gabe, I'll say this. Top Rank knows what they're doing. They're one of the premier elite promotional companies. But, Gabe, they've got to do something about the supporting bouts on an undercard. First of all, the pay-per-view prices, we are now well past the $55, $60 threshold. All pay-per-views at this level, basically for HD, is going to cost you $74.95. With that being said, I've hypothesized for years, and I've been told, undercards don't sell a lot of pay-per-views. But, Gabe, I tip my cap to Golden Boy. They're giving us stuff like Lucas Matisse and Danny Garcia. I think that, again, I know what Top Rank philosophy is, but, Gabe, if you're going to charge this much for pay-per-view, shouldn't we get at least one little bit more solid pay-per-view bout on the undercard than we're getting on Saturday night?
Absolutely no question. There's just no question. This is crap. You know, not to denigrate the fighters, but when you're charging people this kind of money, like if you were just going to see this regular HBO and you were seeing this at in a Vegas casino or whatever, cool, all right, this is a normal pay-per-view, but this is a normal card, but this is a pay-per-view card. It should be the gold standard. But Bob's been in the business a long time. He knows that his brand, which he's taking to a brand new market to kind of revitalize him a little bit and taking him to Macau, people are going to buy it regardless. They got to see what Pacquiao's like after the knockout. So they're going to buy whatever he sells. And that's just flat out abusing your fan base. That's just what that is.
Mm-hmm. Gabe, this past weekend from Ontario, California at the Citizens Business Bank Arena, it was the return of SOG, the super middleweight champion of the world. Andre Ward remains undefeated and unblemished with an easy 12-round decision over Edwin Rodriguez. Your scores: 118-106, 117-107, 116-108. Gabe, I thought the most notable thing about this fight, it was something historic that I hadn't seen before, was the double two-point technical given by Jack Reese, who was playing the role of Joey Crawford. And I think it kind of encapsulates how this fight was fought early on. There was a lot of grappling. It became Greco-Roman. And then Jack Reese in the scrum actually got hit, actually penalized both fighters 2 points, fined them on the spot, and said the next guy that gets penalized, you're out of here. First of all, I thought he did an admirable job in a tough situation. As for the fight itself, Gabe, I thought it was about class. I think Edwin Rodriguez is still a very raw guy, technically a little bit unhinged. And it relates to Andre Ward, whether you love him or hate him, from a perspective of fundamental soundness and having a certain ring philosophy and boxing IQ, he is as good as it gets.
There's no question, of his skill, It's the Q rating, I think, that's the problem with Andre. He just hasn't really connected with the public, in that way. And you said something interesting last week. Somebody was saying, well, I thought he was a draw. He didn't sell a lot of tickets. But there's a real big difference between NorCal and SoCal.
Oh,
and
yes, there is.
And I've lived in both, and I like both. But just because the guy, people up here, diehard sports fans, is very regional. All through California, it's very regional. And the fans clearly aren't going to travel down to NorCal just to see Andre fight. And many of his fans didn't believe that Rodriguez had a chance. We can get into that. I made my pick, and I stuck with it because I didn't want to flop another time. I picked Ward by decision on this show last week. And the middle of the week, I just had a feeling that based on the conditioning and the energy level and the size that I thought Rodriguez would come into the ring, like 190-plus, I thought that he would try to pull a Margarito and really wear down Ward, who would look rusty, or at least take some time getting into it. And I thought he would go to the ropes a little more than he did. Instead, we got a super sharp Ward that didn't really tire throughout the fight, fought a really high clip and was able to keep that going. And the weight thing, I think skills-wise, he was an underdog for a reason and a wide one. But once he didn't have the energy to kind of make up for that, watching him just stay at 180 and the whole thing, the fight was just – looking at it by the second round, I was like, this fight is just over. And
yeah,
Ward's not going to knock him out, but he was just going to cruise to a decision.
Gabe, going to your original point about being a draw, they announced the crowd in Ontario at 4105. I got to be honest, it looked more closer to 3,000 to 3,500. I heard some reports that the local gyms were given stacks of tickets to give away. But I don't think that right there is an indictment of Dan Goosen or Andre Ward. I talked to Dan several months ago about this. Bottom line is the arenas like the Oracle up north in the Shark Tank, for whatever reason, were booked. And you're right. There is a huge difference between Southern California, where I am, and Northern California, where you are. And quite frankly, it's like two different states, and they don't like each other. All you have to do, and I'm not making light of this because people have died and gotten hurt, look at the Giant and Dodger fans. They literally want to kill each other. And I think another thing that hurt this promotion with Andre Ward, he wasn't fighting a local guy. He was not fighting a big-name Mexican. And there was also a USC football game with Stanford, which was sold out. So there was a lot going on. And I think moving forward, one thing Andre Ward has to do is let Dan Goosen try to promote, because this has been a lost year. But watching Andre Ward technically and seeing him ply his craft, he's very, very adaptable. The first 30 seconds, I thought he was kind of overwhelmed or surprised by the brute aggression, Gabe, of Edwin Rodriguez. But by the second or third round, he was more than holding his own on the inside, grappling, barring the arm, nullifying on the inside, finding openings. And if you talk about the technical flaws of Edwin Rodriguez, I give Edwin Rodriguez this. He was passionate, but he was not precise. I mean, his right hand kind of reminded me of my days going to the batting cages, those long looping releases of those machines that would throw 85-mile-per-hour fastballs. You cannot telegraph your punches against Andre Ward. He will avoid those with his eyes closed, and those leaping, lunging left hooks simply had no chance to land. And the one thing about Ward that I really like, he does a great job of feinting and then jabbing off the feints. He has a very hard, fast jab, and he's a very, very difficult puzzle to beat. And we're being asked right here on Twitter, who beats him at 68? Honestly, I don't see anyone. I really think at 68 he's cleaned out that division, and I think there should be a call for him to move up to 75. And, Gabe, one issue, going back to Edwin Rodriguez, he did not make weight. I think there were a lot of issues going on. Is it time that the commissions themselves, instead of the customary 20 to 25% that you fine them, do you make the penalties even harsher so guys understand don't sign up for a fight if you've outgrown the weight?
Well, I mean, he got fined $200,000 plus, I think it ended up all told like 45% is what Ward wanted. I think penalties have got to be the thing. I mean, there's not a deterrent if you can just say, well, I'm still going to make like $800,000. It's tough, you know. I think somebody smarter than me needs to make that decision. I'm not sure what to do there. I will say this, though, is there were people that looked at Rodriguez and said he was unprofessional. He outgrew the weight class, and it happened. He tried to do something. He tried to starve himself and dehydrate himself down, as fighters do every week on every show that we see. And he missed by 2 pounds because his body shut down. He looked at his body. He was ripped. He was in shape. But, I mean, you're asking a guy to do an unnatural act in a scientific fashion, and it's not really that exact of science, as much as people try to say it is. And the thing that I'll say about, you know, Ward dismissed Rodriguez doing VADA testing as a mere publicity stunt. Well, one, it'd be a publicity stunt if he wasn't going to be doing drug testing randomly for the rest of the year up to this point, which he's going to be. So that's just BS on Andre's part. But two, guys use diuretics all the time to make that weight. And a guy in Edwin Rodriguez's position, making $1 million in his biggest fight, in a title fight, that knows probably maybe the night before, hey, man, I may not be making this weight. They could have taken a diuretic if they weren't in a VADA-type program or a USADA-type program, maybe gotten away with it. And then what do we got? And then it opens a whole other thing. What if he wins and he used that drug to do it? Edwin Rodriguez, in taking the stance that Andre Ward refused to, actually protected Andre Ward in a way that Andre doesn't understand.
You know what I found ironic, Gabe? When Andre Ward was obviously stumping and being very political about Chavez's inability or unwillingness to make weight against Brian Vera, suddenly he wants to be the bad cop as it relates to his opponent. Again, that's why you should just be honest and stop having agendas while you're on the air for HBO. Ladies and gentlemen, if you want to call, we're going to open up the phone lines right now. We've got plenty of other things to talk about, news and notes. Yes, we will preview and talk about Froch Groves in the UK coming up this weekend. But give us a call, 347-215-7598. Gabe, who's up on deck?
In the 503, you are live on the next round.
Yes, give us your name, and what can we do for you?
Hello, this is Mr. First. This is Tyler again from Oregon.
Tyler, how are you? What's going on?
Pretty good. Couple questions. I remember like reading like there was a press release back in like March or February of this year. It was from HBO saying that they aren't going to buy any more like Golden Boy fights. And I kind of completely forgot about it. And I don't really hear anyone talking about it anymore. I mean, like HBO increased why fights can't be made anymore. Do you know why they did that? Was it just because Mayweather jumped to Showtime?
You know, Tyler, I believe a lot of that. I believe that was the final nail in the coffin. Yes, and I also believe that they didn't want to deal with some of the issues as it related to Al Haymon. Now, I will say this in defense of HBO: if you look at, say, the five best fights on premium cable in 2013, I think at least three or four of them have been on HBO. In defense of Ken Hirschman, and if you look at the 20 highest rated shows this year in boxing, I believe 18 or 19 have been with HBO. So it's not like as if they've fallen off the cliff, no matter what anyone says. I think what's going to happen is, as it relates to the Cold War, Tyler, I think in the short term, Gabe, me and you have talked about this, everyone's going to put their best foot forward. Talk to me in 2014 and 15 and 16, Gabe.
That's the thing. I want to see how that all pans out. I mean, people kind of have exhausted their own matchups that they can do, and Golden Boy are using some guys that are kind of developed by other people. Will their Olympic you know hopefuls pan out? Will you know the guys at Top Rank have? Will those guys be ready? Is Felix Verdejo the future? And how much can they do with that guy? How much does Manny Pacquiao have left? You know, it's a lot of great questions coming in the next 2 years. I think if they are not able to really keep it sustained on their own, they're going to have to work together. At some point, the networks have to look at it. You know, will Steven Espinoza still have his job in 2-3 years, or Ken Hirschman? You know, and if one of those guys changes, the dynamic could change yet again. So there's a lot up in the air.
Tyler, anything else?
Yeah, this is kind of an obscure question, but Hongtuok Wongjunghan, the former flyweight champion, longtime flyweight champion, Hall of Famer or not?
Gabe, I'll defer to you on this because, quite frankly, I haven't studied it enough. I'm not part of the Boxing Writers Association, unfortunately, so I can't vote. But there has been a pattern, though, and it goes all the way back to KSI Galaxy, who eventually got in. What I've noticed is the standout Asians, it takes them about 4 to 5 years longer than, let's say, the North American counterparts, regardless of how good they were in their career. Gabe?
You know, I'm not really a historian guy, and I actually don't belong to the infinite body that is the BWAA, just because of the fact that they're an infinite body, many other reasons. So yeah, I don't really study the who's going to get in the Hall of Fame or who's not. I kind of stay current in my caring about certain issues. But I would recommend Cliff Gold. I'd recommend Doug Fisher. Those are guys that really – Cliff really – is a guy that pays attention to divisions that other people don't. Now, I've been a fan of the fighter and watched him for years. I enjoy listening to Steve pull out his name like it's perfect. I always screw it up. But, you know, as far as his Hall of Fame credentials, I'm not sure.
Mm-hmm.
I mean,
Tyler,
borderline, but I don't think first ballot.
Tyler, before we let you go, yes or no, are you buying the pay-per-view this week from Macau?
No, I'm not. That is a complete mismatch. Pacquiao's going to win every single round and en route to knocking out Rios.
Okay, Tyler, thanks for the call.
All right, thank you.
Here's a tweet from Figures 11, M. Garrison. Mr. Kim, as an English major, I love your writing. Ha ha. What do you think is next in play for Ruslan Provodnikov? Gabe, here's what I've been told and what I kind of get the feeling. I think Ruslan's in a very good spot. I think there's going to be some sort of scrum as it relates to the Saturday night winner between Pacquiao and Rios, Tim Bradley, Marquez, and Provodnikov.
Yeah, that's what I understand. He's in that mix, you know, and Banner Promotions is, I think, more than happy with working with Top Rank right now as in regards to him. It seems to me that the entering into the golden, and this isn't anything off of what Banner has said or anybody has said to me, but just my observation, entering into that area of Golden Boy, Haymon, Showtime, I don't think you really keep much control of your fighter. Even look at Lucas Matisse. He started out with one promoter, and now he's Golden Boy Heyman. And there was some dispute over how that happened. So I expect him to be involved in that little group.
Here's another tweet from our good friend Joshua at StirredHeart22. Is Robert Guerrero on deck for the Broner Maidana winner? Gabe, that would seem to be a very logical fight. It's all in-house. Here's what I've heard about Guerrero, though, whose career's kind of gone to Bolivian since he got shut out by Mayweather. As part of that contract, his minimum is very, very high. So if you expect Robert Guerrero to fight a certain level of fight, he's also going to expect to get paid. But I think on paper, Gabe, Guerrero against the winner of Broner Maidana, I certainly would not mind.
Yeah, I've watched that fight. I've watched, you know, Guerrero, other than against Floyd, I've never had a problem watching him fight. You know, the Berto fight was kind of a brutal fight and an ugly fight, but I was still very, very entertained, and he brings it. You know, I've never had a problem with Robert Guerrero, the fighter. It was always kind of more the endless press releases. And then, you know, quite honestly, I've had two people from his camp now try to convince me that I saw a fight that, other than the one I actually did see. That's insulting to me.
If you want to call in, 347-215-7598. Who's next on the queue there, Gabe?
In the 718, you are live on the next round. 718.
Hey, hi, Steve. How you doing? It's Pedro from the Bronx.
Pedro, how are you?
Hey.
Robert Guerrero, is he going to be the new Joshua Clady? He's going to price himself out of all fights and then end up doing small cards in Long Island somewhere?
You know what? I'll be honest with you. I think the difference is, I think Guerrero at least tried. And traditionally, Guerrero has been in some pretty entertaining fights here and there. But I do think it's a delicate issue because Robert Guerrero is a decent-sized draw up there in the kind of the mid-central area of California up north. But again, expectations are going to be very interesting as to who he wants to fight and then what he believes he is worth. To me, let's face it, Pedro and Gabe, while he lost every round to Mayweather, he didn't get hit all that much. Why is he out for this long? I just don't understand it. Last I checked, being a fighter means you actually do your job more than once a year.
Yeah, I'm not really sure what the deal is. You know, he didn't want the Keith Thurman fight. I think they also felt that once they got to this level that they would be treated the way Canelo is being treated, I guess, and that now you're a star too because you fought Floyd. I mean, I'm just kind of interpreting what the actions and what I've watched. And that's not the case. I mean, I think he didn't expect to get handed a Keith Thurman. I think he expected to get handed, you know, I don't know, somebody that Zanfer would put on, you know, or something, you know. So I'm not really sure where they're coming from. Do they want like a tune-up bout and a showcase fight or what? But you're right. Fighters fight.
And Pedro
is making it.
Yeah, and guys, Pedro, they've been so inactive. We haven't even been inundated and bombarded with a press release in months. That's alarming to me. Very alarming.
Yeah.
I have a couple other matchups. Oh, yeah, I was talking about Maidana and Broner. I would like to see Garcia fight any of them. He could be like, oh, I beat the other Argentinian guy, or Broner. Then if he beats Broner, he could be matched up with Mayweather. And then what about Groves versus Ward? And I want to see Lomachenko and Garcia down the line sometime next year or early 2015.
You know, those are all very good matchups. Lomachenko, it looks like he announced by himself, and Aram kind of speculated that fight's going to be backed up. He has a hand issue, so he will not be fighting Salido January 25th at the theater of Madison Square Garden. Let's see how he deals in the second half of that fight with Siri Salido. I think he dominates the first half of the fight. I don't know what happens in the second. As for the rest of the matchups that you mentioned, it looks like they're pretty much both in-house between Top Rank and Golden Boy, so they do seem very realistic. Gabe, here's the interesting part. Danny Garcia comes off this great victory over the Machine. I haven't heard a damn thing. Do you know anything that's going on with that career of Swift Garcia?
You know, I don't, actually. I kind of just reached out to somebody that might know. I haven't heard anything back. I have no idea. It is weird. It was like, I mean, he was a guy that, I mean, they should be celebrating that guy. Wouldn't you say, is he a Fighter of the Year candidate? He had one of the bigger wins of the year. Nobody counted him. Nobody expected him to beat Lucas Matisse, and did it pretty handily. I have no idea. He went straight to Bolivian. Mm-hmm. It almost kind of makes you wonder, with that company, sometimes guys win. James Kirkland over Angulo, there was another one. They kind of were going to treat him like an opponent with Canelo, but the guys get a win, and then they're just gone. Dmitry Pyrog was another one, but that's a long story. Mm-hmm. I have no idea what happened to Garcia.
Pedro, is there anything else we could do for you?
Yeah, Paul Williams came back. He's not an elite fighter, but he came back well. He got hit a lot, but he didn't get knocked.
Well, you know what's funny? Gabe, you followed Paul Williams' career much closer than I did. Now, he got absolutely stretched by Sergio Martinez. You were there that night. He was able to rebound with some victories against the Japanese guy, but did he ever really reach those heights post-Sergio Martinez?
Well, that's the thing. How high is Brandon Rios? I guess that's what we're going to find out, you know. Is he an elite guy or – I mean, you can
fought Lara. He's not chopped liver, so yeah.
Well,
Lara.
He fought Lara, but he also lost 9 out of 12 rounds.
Yes, he did. He got. I remember Roy Jones talking about he should retire from boxing in that fight. I'm like, really, Roy?
That was pot meat kettle.
Yeah. Wow. Oh, one more question. Do you know if they performed a CTE scan on what's his name?
Gotti.
Magomed.
No, Gotti. After he died, you know, I saw that special on Frontline about football players and CTE. Did they perform that on Gotti to see if he had that?
I know they did an autopsy based on the very mysterious circumstances of his quote-unquote suicide. I've never actually heard that they did anything like that as it related to Mr. Thunder Gotti. Pedro, listen, we got to run. Thanks for the call.
All right, you guys take care. Thank you again.
Gabe, we got to address this before we go into the next call. And again, the number, 347-215-7598. I have a lot of respect for Matt Froom and Eddie Hearn. They do a very, very good job of being promoters. They develop talent. They also have the prize fight series. But I'm just going to say this right now. Based on what has happened recently in boxing, going back to Frankie Liel, Mago, and this recently with the guy that fought Jorge Arce,
Carmona.
To use James Toney in prize fight, and now – I guess Golden Boy announced that they're going to make Jermaine Taylor against J.C. Candelo December 14th. Gabe, I guess this is a rhetorical question. Have they learned absolutely nothing, the business of boxing?
Nothing. No conscience. That's the thing you said. It would have taken some checks and balances and a conscience. And that's what's missing. I mean, Jermaine Taylor, because, you know, they're putting him in against J.C. Candelo, whose last fight was like last year, November. He got stopped in the sixth round. And it was a guy that was, like, durable. And Candelo is a guy that you put in because he was going to lose to your guy. He was going to give your guys rounds. But then you start to look at the career, and now he's starting to get stopped. Now he's starting to get stopped sooner. It's like, okay, now he's getting brain damage. Like, the chin that he had doesn't hold up the way it used to. Or he's trying to stay at a weight that he shouldn't be at anymore because that's where he's useful. It could be a number of things. But, yeah, I mean, we need to start really looking at things. And the business is already dangerous, and that's never going to change. If you're going to keep boxing, you've got to regulate it. And this is bad. I mean, Jermaine Taylor, he had a brain bleed. He shouldn't really be fighting. We're letting him fight, but now we're going to put him in after he didn't look good in winning over Caleb Truax. What's going to be different? He's older. He's been out for a while, and he's going to fight J.C. Candelo, who's coming off a year layoff and a loss. I just shame on them. It's just awful. And they're really
what's
just trying
the
to
end game,
Candelo.
Gabe, what is the end game? Because I remember back in February of this year, it was gonna be Peter Quillen against Jermaine Taylor, and there was the predictable and, you know, quite frankly, justified outrage. And then they shut it down, and then you didn't see anything from Jermaine Taylor. I'm just wondering. Let's face it. Most of the marquee middleweights and super middleweights that Peter Quillen needs to fight, or Danny Jacobs, who might get Peter Quillen, are at HBO. Do you think they're somehow trying to recycle and rehab Jermaine Taylor on that side of the ledger?
Well, he is a Heyman fighter. So
yes,
yeah,
he is.
I do. Yeah, I think that's exactly what they're doing. And that's why they put him in with J.C. Candelo, because he's falling apart. And so he's probably going to get knocked out by Taylor. And they're going to go, look, Taylor's back. Let's put him in with Peter Quillen. And that's what's going to happen. And, yeah, it just seems ABC. I mean, unless you fit Danny Jacobs in there somewhere where they're trying to make that fight with Quillen, which I think is actually an interesting fight. I'd like to see Danny take another test or two before that fight, but he's starting to – I like what I've seen from him. It's just he's doing it all over again. He's fighting guys at a little bit lower level and looking good. But the last fight I thought he looked good. But, yeah, that's exactly what they're doing. And it's awful.
Mm-hmm. If you want to call in, 347-215-7598. You're listening to the next round on the Leave It in the Ring radio network of David Duenez, Golden Gate Gabe Montoya, and Steve K9 Kim. Gabe, who's next on the queue?
In the 562, you are live on the next round. 562.
Hey, guys. It's Hugo from Fontana, California.
Hugo, how are you?
Hey, what's up?
Very good. Steve, I've been listening to all the way when you used to have the show on 1150, and you came on with Newey Scruggs, a long
the
time
main event.
Follower
you're going
of your,
back to
yes.
1997 and 1998. Yes, that's
correct,
a very long
correct.
Time. Thank you for the continued support, by the way.
Yeah, no problem. Hey, listen, I had a few points regarding this Canelo Cotto situation. Do you think that to sweeten the pot, Golden Boy might do something similar to what they did with Hopkins and De La Hoya, have them in the same part, put it on pay-per-view, and then maybe on the next pay-per-view go up against each other? You know?
Hugo, my understanding is, in talking to Richard Schaefer, and we've all read the reports, Canelo Alvarez is fighting March 8th. And, Gabe, I don't know how you feel about it, but this fight you got to do right now. And Miguel Cotto just had his tune-up on HBO, ironically, if that's the route he goes. I think that Richard Schaefer made that offer, which he says is above eight figures, and I tend to believe him. Gabe, there's no reason to marinate this one. This one is ready to cook right now.
Yeah, I don't understand why you would delay it at all. It's you know, promotionally built up. Everybody wants to see it. Just do it. It doesn't make, you know, to me, that's where I would go. I don't know.
Yeah. But, you know, I just thought maybe, you know, if they're really interested and, you know, even if Cotto's trying to, you know, suck a few more dollars from Golden Boy, maybe that, you know, they would, you know, try to, you know, maybe put them in just against a name in the same card. I know it's already, both already named, and maybe the fourth and fifth biggest draw, so you can make a case for them. But, you know, just to try to act, you know, Cotto has always said that.
Yeah.
You know, that's all he knows how to do. You know, maybe in a few extra dollars, and, you know, he can, as Mike Tyson said, would say, go into Bolivia, you know, with some an extra $12, $13 million, and it's, you know.
Would you
remember this, though, Hugo. Golden Boy differs in terms of their philosophy as opposed to Top Rank. And Richard Schaefer's told this to me and many other members of the media. We don't marinate. We cook. And as far as I'm concerned, Canelo against Cotto, I'm not so sure you'd do all that many more pay-per-view buys if you had a prelude pay-per-view where they each took on a B-level guy. I think that's a fight that they have every intention of doing March 8th.
Just one final thing. I'm sorry, Greg, I didn't mean to interrupt.
Okay.
Regarding that, Demetrius Andre, he's been doing business. Andre's promoter has been doing more business with Top Rank. I'm not one of those guys that are like, oh, well, he needs to go to Golden Boy. But it seems to me that aside for maybe James Kirkland, there's not a lot out there for Andre to make money. So, I mean, would Tallulah work with Golden Boy on something with Andre?
Let me just say this. Even though in theory being the third-party promoter gives you the freedom to exercise your business plan on both sides of the street, I've talked to people who are in that position, and they'll tell you, once a network invests early on in a fighter like Andre, there's kind of a quid pro quo, Gabe, in a sense that they kind of expect you to repay that loyalty, because the next time you come around with the fighter, they'll tell you, yeah, why would we give you a shot when you screwed us the first time? That's kind of the reality of what exists in this current climate.
Well, business is relationships, you know, and you don't want to screw people over because you may have to deal with them again. Because it's not just one fighter, and I think that's also why the sport doesn't always really change, you know, is because the promoters know that there's always going to be another fighter, just like the networks always know there's going to be another fighter. Although the fighters always think that they're the only fighter. I think Andrade doesn't have a lot of room. It kind of depends on where he wants to go. He's also not an Al Haymon guy, as I understand it, right? He's just with Banner. He's kind of on his own.
Mm-hmm.
We'll see where he goes
now
that he's got a belt.
Hugo, is there anything else we can do for you?
No, that's it, guys. Thank you very much. Thanks for the time.
All right. 347-215-7598. We are here till 8:30 Eastern Time, 5:30 Pacific, a perfect segue to Monday Night Football. Gabe, who's next on deck?
Actually, Andrade represents a perfect example of what you were talking about last week, that the belts matter for these guys because he is in that smaller market, Provodnikov, too. When you get a belt, you've got the leverage. 510, you are live on the next round.
Hello, 510. And we have our first knockdown of the night.
All right. In the 215, you are live on the phone. 215?
And it seems like 215 gave in a wind tunnel.
Yeah, they're clearly driving on the freeway. And we'll go for one more. In the 724, you're live on the next round. 724.
I'm just listening in, guys.
Hey, no problem. No problem at all. There you go.
Hey, moving forward here, and by the way, if you want to call in, we have full, clear phone lines, 347-215-7598. If you had a question or a tweet, please, at Gabriel underscore Montoya, at Steve Max Boxing, and at Max Boxing Live. Gabe, I think this is a gem of a fight from the UK for one of the two of the super middleweight belts, but not for the super middleweight champion. That's Andre Ward. Carl Froch takes on George Groves. Gabe, I'm going to tell you, it's so easy to go with Froch because the guy finds a way to win. He's rugged. He's salty. He's tough. But I'm going to tell you, I think George Groves has some physical tools, and I think he's got the boxing IQ that I think this is going to be a very, very tough matchup.
And it's crazy to think that Froch is 36 years old. I don't think of him that old, but he's been around a while, you know, and it's not – like he's got a ton of fights, actually, you know, are pretty close. But you can't count out George Groves. I really like him in this fight. I think he's got good footwork. He knows how to box. And he showed that in the James DeGale fight, where a lot of people picked against him. I picked him in that fight because I liked that he not only could box, he has a really nice amateur pedigree, but he also knows how to get you to fight with him. And he showed against DeGale that he can handle a guy that's slick and can give different looks. He can track you down. I don't think that's going to be his problem with Carl Froch. We're going to find out if he can take the punishment Froch will give him. Can he handle that awkward style, which Froch is so good at using? But I like the fundamentals of George Groves in this fight. I like the youth, the speed. The only thing that gives me pause with him is his inexperience. You know, it's 33 fights total versus 19 fights. You know, Froch has got 231 rounds boxed professionally. Groves has 95. That's the thing that really separates him. Everything else I really like about George Groves.
One thing I like about Groves, he has a very good jab. I mean, it's fast, it's steady, it's piston-like, and he changes speeds on it. And that's one of the keys, I think, to controlling the Cobra, to tame him like a mongoose, is to be very good on the front side, keeping your distance. And Groves, I think right now is a better athlete. Froch, there's a point in time, as good as Froch has been, there's a point in time, Gabe, where experience can become corrosion in this sport, where you can age. And I don't know. It's an interesting fight to me. I don't know who I'm going to pick here. I'm still waffling. I remember talking to Paul Smith, the British lightweight that's trained by Joe Gallagher. He actually spent some time this past summer at the Wild Card Gym. Very good guy, that whole family. And I said, hey, you've been in there with these guys. And he was in there with Groves. And I said, does Grove have a chance? And he said, absolutely he does. So I'm just saying, Gabe, I got to tell you, I'm just gutless. I can't make a pick here because I think this really is a very tough fight.
Well, since I took away my Rios upset special pick and moved it over to the chalk, I think I'll take a step out on this one. I'll go Groves. I'll go Groves by decision. I think Ward showed that you can give with a good jab and movement and angles, and you just don't stick around to fight too long. You can beat Carl Froch. He's been beaten that way. If you stand for the two and try to battle with him, I think that's where you get into troubles. And so it's going to be up to Groves to fight judiciously, to fight in spurts, and maybe even fight at a little bit of a pace that the 36-year-old Froch can't handle. I'm going to not, you know, it's a very shaky limb, but I'll get out on it and go with Groves by decision.
Here's a tweet that's very interesting to me from Bradley Edwards. UK rumors have been that Groves doesn't have an iron chin. If it is better than advertised, Groves may pull it off. Gabe, I talked to someone that is in the boxing industry, and they told me one of the reasons why the Froch camp was willing to take this fight is that when they sparred, that something happened in those sparring sessions that the Froch camp said, okay, we'll do it. Because think about it, Gabe. If you're Carl Froch and you are right now the biggest, most economically robust super middleweight in the world, Why are you taking Groves? It really makes no sense if you look at the risk versus reward ratio. There's a lot to lose, right? And there's not that much to gain. I mean, George Groves is a very good young fighter that one day is going to be a big draw. But I always found that interesting. Why are they taking this fight now? Is it like that old line from Max Schmeling where he looked at a young Joe Lewis, IZ something?
Yeah, it could be. I mean, you might as well get a guy before he's ready than when he's ready. Look at Michael Grant. You normally wouldn't want to fight somebody that's athletic, 6'5", got a good right hand, showed the ability to get up off the canvas and win. But, you know, he only had one experience like that. You don't want that guy to mature and get battle-tested, and then you're old and you got to deal with him. Get him while he's young. Get that loss on his record. Be the one to teach him the lesson. Like I said, it's a very shaky limb, you know, and if his chin is shaky, then that limb is going to snap, and I'm going to come tumbling to the ground 2 weeks in a row.
You know what? I'm going to go with Frotch. I may regret this, but I'm going to go with Frotch based on some of the background information I've been given. And there's one thing about Frotch. You don't pick against him or count him out or say that he's on the downside till you actually see it. Here's a tweet from Joshua, one of our regular listeners at Stuttgart22. Guys, Golovkin, February 1 potential opponents. Gabe, I'm hearing that Martin Murray, who is now the regular WBA champion and Golovkin's the super WBA champion, whatever that means, they're going to have tune-up fights or they're going to have separate fights. Gabe, just make this fight. I mean, I'm being dead serious. I can understand that there's other fights you can't make for Golovkin, but if you're Gennady Golovkin and you still have a lot to prove at 160, shouldn't you just force the hand and say, okay, you know what, we're on a very good run here, let's keep it going, and judging by the Twitter reaction, it is Martin Murray that people want to see against Triple G.
It makes no sense to do this. And this is why it's like in the same breath that on the same show that I'm like, the belts matter for the guys that are independent and they, you know, like you always put out, it helps them make money. Things like this, you're like, what are you doing, sanctioning body? I don't understand. Super champion, regular champion, like just have one belt. Just have one. And if somebody gets injured and you need to do an interim thing, cool. But don't make, you know, interim is supposed to be kind of a special circumstance, not like the way it always is. And you got that guy gets to keep it. No, make them fight each other. It makes no sense. This is what a sanctioning body should be for. It's for situations like this where two guys are avoiding each other, and you go, no. You guys need to fight each other. If you want our belt, fight each other. That's what it should
be. Well, Gabe, also, the super champion designation is really for when a guy has two or three belts, like an Andre Ward. And no disrespect to the IBO, but let's face it, it's not one of the four major belts. And when you have multiple belts, it is very, very difficult to have the opportunity to fulfill your mandatory obligations. Well, let's face it, Gennady Golovkin doesn't have that right now. And I think if Gennady Golovkin wants to put himself in position for a real, legitimate big fight, okay, above the level he's had the last four or five, Gabe, I think Martin Murray has to be on that resume in February. That's just my personal opinion.
I agree with you. I think that Murray is a guy that is a measuring stick against Sergio Martinez, for one. I mean, he's a logical opponent. If you're trying to chase down Martinez, then go knock out the guy that everybody thinks beat Martinez. Say, now what? You know, and everybody will back you. I mean, I'm not opposed to the Martinez fight, but I understand Martinez is banged up and he wants to see if his body is going to still work. I get that. And he doesn't really owe Gennady Golovkin a damn thing. He doesn't really owe anybody that. But at the same time, you know, with this situation, it's like, well, you guys can't say that Martinez is ducking me and then go, well, we're going to do an interim fight before we get to Martin Murray. Like, what's the holdup? You know, and let's just get it going. So, yeah, it just doesn't make sense to me.
Bradley Edwards tweets us, Murray is fighting on the Frotch undercard. Why would he need another tune-up fight? So, in essence, it's a tune-up of a tune-up. I'm going to start calling Martin Murray a Connolube here. I mean, honestly, guys, let's get to the fights that we want. Here is another tweet from Pedro at PRivera082. If Grove wins, they could make Ward versus Groves. You know, it would be a viable fight, but, again, I want to know what the politics are. Would the side of George Groves, should they come out victorious, Gabe, are they eligible to fight on the HBO side of the street? Because if I recall correctly, George Groves has been a part of a couple Golden Boy undercards in the past.
Yeah, I wouldn't even know what kind of web is going on there, personally. I'll have to look into that. That's Is that a makeable fight? I have no idea. And I'm curious. Yeah, there's a lot. There's a lot of moving parts here.
And here's another tweet from Louie at Tranquillo Guapo. Thoughts on Carl Dargan's performance on NBC, Gabe?
Well, I'm sorry. I was looking at the call sheet. Could you repeat that, Steve? My bad.
Yes. Thoughts on Carl Dargan's performance on NBC?
Oh, you know, I think he needs to fight more often. I think that's the big problem with him. We I know some people say I don't need to see him more often, but there's no consistency. And I'm actually doing kind of a piece. I wanted to see how he looked, and I'm doing a piece about him and kind of wondering about him because he's a guy that he has nice tools. I don't think there's a reason why he kind of fights sporadically other than he doesn't fight often enough to really know who he is. He's a very storied amateur, but he kind of has stalled in the pros, and a lot of it was he turned pro without a promoter and was just kind of hunting and pecking. Now that Main Event's picked him up, it makes me very curious because they're very good at picking out that hidden gem, polishing it into something. And I'm wondering if Dargan is going to be one of those because I don't necessarily consider him stinky. I mean, I like that lead right hand of his. I like his defense and his movement. I don't think he's, you know, being hidden, you know, or I don't think they're masking any sort of major flaw of his. But I want to see more aggression and I want to see more consistency and I want to see him fight on a regular basis. With Main Events, he will. So that's my take on Carl Dargan right now.
One thing Kathy Duva has always said to me, she said, Steve, you want to fight for Main Events, you better be willing to do your job. And I think Carl has a lot of talent. He has a lot of physical talent. But for the bulk of his career, he's kind of been a sparring partner out there in Big Bear in the camp of Shane Mosley. Sparring is great. It's all part of the natural process of developing yourself as a professional fighter. But there's only one way to really get better. Face live bullets. And listen, Michael Brooks was actually pretty tough. Solid southpaw, was not a dead body. He got some work in. Now the next step, go in another month or two because Kathy Duva has a show December 14th, and they're also coming back on NBC Sports Network on January 24th, which will feature the return of one Curtis Showtime Stevens. If you want to call in, 347-215-7598. Gabe, anyone on the queue?
Let me pull up. At some point he's going to have to swim and get wet. In the 347, you're live on the next round. 347?
Hello, 347.
Oh, okay, second knockdown. And I'm trying to look at the list. And in the 215, or did I already call on the back? This is the guy on the freeway. 215, you live on the next round.
Yeah.
Oh, cool.
Good. What's your name? What can we do for you?
Oh, yeah, it's Fair Shake Boxing. I just want to make a statement about the Brandon Rio fight and the Pacquiao. I'm just saying, this is just me. I'm taking Pacquiao. I'm taking Rios by KO. I was going to put that out there. You remember this call, Fair Shake Boxing. I'm taking Rio by KO. That's all I wanted to say.
Now, Fair Shake, hold on. Before you get going, where are you driving, by the way? What freeway?
I'm not driving. The first time that you called me, I was actually jogging, and I couldn't talk.
Oh, so you're getting your road work in.
Yeah.
Nice.
But right now, you probably ran more miles than Chris Arriola the last 5 years.
Possibly.
Now, Fair Shake, the reasoning for your bold prediction, because you are one of the few picking Rios, do you believe Manny Pacquiao is permanently damaged goods?
No, I don't. I don't even believe he's permanently damaged goods. I just believe that Rios is hungry. I believe that Rios has a great inside game, and I believe he's going to win in the inside. I believe he's going to stop him in the inside. That's how I believe he's going to do it. I believe Rios is going to be 100% motivated. I believe is the best fight and the most significant fight in his career, and I believe he's going to get up for it. And I believe that Pacquiao is not going to be able to stop what he brings. That's what I believe.
Now, Fair Shake, we were talking about Carl Dargan. I'm sure you're familiar. What is the word on the street in Philadelphia about Carl Dargan?
He doesn't fight enough. That's the word on the street.
That's the word on the street here, by the way.
Yeah, he doesn't fight enough. The only thing with him, like, people like Carl, and he's a good. He has a good personality. He's personable. He socializes a lot. He's personable, and he has a good personality. It's just like, you know, in order for us to like him as a boxer, he has to fight more so we can see him more. We don't care about him as a. We care about him personality wise as a person, but it's boxing. We want to see you as a boxer, and, you know, we don't get to see that a lot.
As they say, Fair Shake, out of sight, out of mind. Fair Shake, before we let you go, say hello to Schooly D for me out there, okay, in Philadelphia.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Schooly D.
All right, well, that was Fair Shake Boxing with a bold prediction. That's the first one, Gabe, of all the calls that we've had. Is there anyone out there that is picking Brandon Bam Bam Rios to effectively end the marquee career of Manny Pacquiao? If you are, 347-215-7598. Gabe, speaking of guys from Philadelphia, I got to give Garrett Wilson some credit. Here's a guy that literally came in on about 36 hours' notice. Thomas Adamick comes up ill. And Kathy Duva and Jolene Mazzone actually really literally called out to all four corners of the states and all over the world. Finally got someone to take this fight to earn a little bit of money for the holiday season on NBC. And I got to tell you, he didn't win the fight, but Garrett Wilson, I thought, performed very admirably under the circumstances.
Yeah, somebody's getting a new Xbox this year. That was, you know, he got a little Christmas money. And, you know, he gave us entertainment. That's what a fighter is, you know, a guy that comes out and really just lays it out there on the line, you know, and the technique isn't the greatest, you know, a lot of leaping left hooks and wide open shots, but the effort, that's, you know, like somebody said earlier, I just don't see how you thought Edwin Rodriguez could win. To me, like when you throw everything against the wall, all of your conditioning and everything that you have, sometimes will overcome skill, but you've got to be ready to do it. And I thought, you know, here's a guy that give him 6 weeks to get in shape, to be in a target to focus on. And that would be somebody I'd like to watch. Absolutely. Even if he's in losing efforts, he was fun to watch and he's passionate, and that's contagious.
Yeah, Gabe, a couple of notes here. I spoke to Kathy earlier. The Glasgow-Adamek fight will be rescheduled. That is an IBF eliminator, so she is exercising her right. So expect to see that fight sometime early 2014. Also, Garrett Wilson, Kathy is planning on having Garrett Wilson fight on January 24th in a televised slot, a lesson to all fighters. Number one, be ready. Number two, be bold. It's okay to lose. Under the circumstances, people, reasonable people, will understand and good things can happen. Because, Gabe, I heard some stories of fighters being offered pretty damn good money. And, again, NBC doesn't pay like HBO. But if you're a fighter, first of all, be ready to fight at a moment's notice. Always be in the gym. And number two, sometimes life rewards the bold. Garrett Wilson was bold. He did not win. But you know what, Gabe, in my opinion, he may have actually kick-started a career.
No question. There's no question. It's when the moment opportunity knocks, you better be able to answer with, like, what do you need? I've got it all covered. And he did. You know, and that's – yeah, I've heard plenty of stories of guys been offered something, weren't ready, or hemmed and hawed, and, well, I don't know. And like you said, fortune favors the bold. It always does. You always be rewarded for, like, being ready. A lot of life, like you said, you know, is showing up, and the rest of it is being ready to, you know. And it's just awesome to see.
347-215-7598. Tell us, are you picking Manny Pacquiao or Brandon Rios? First of all, are you even ordering this pay-per-view? I'm very... very curious to see how this does, Gabe, because they've never done an HBO pay-per-view in 187 prior events, Gabe. They've always been from this country or this continent. The Pacquiao stock is obviously down. This is not 2009. Gabe, over or under, do you think they break 650,000 buys?
Oof, that's a good question. No. I'll say 600. I'll say we like close, but no cigar. I think Manny's still a good brand, but I think the impression is that this is his comeback gimme, no matter how much, you know, Brandon people think. And you know, to Fairshake's point, Brandon throws a really great uppercut, and Manny's always been a sucker for an uppercut. It is really true. If Manny doesn't take that shot well and Brandon's able to get it off with regularity, I could see some problems. He is very good on the inside. And Manny's game is a long game, you know, long-range game, more so than an inside fighting. He's not fully the most technical boxer on the planet. So it's not an out-of-nowhere pick to pick Brandon Rios in this fight.
Gabe, any callers on the queue?
Let me look. Actually, no, we're – well, wait a minute, no. In the – no, This is a new one. 402, you were live on the next round.
402. Hello. Hi, this is Azeem from Omaha, Nebraska.
Azeem, welcome from Cornhusker State. How are you?
I'm pretty good. How are you guys?
I'm doing well. What can we do for you?
Yeah, I just had a prediction on the Pacquiao and the Rios fight.
Mm-hmm.
And I think Pacquiao is just going to be too fast for Rios. If you can see anything that was going to give trouble to Rios, I think that's going to be speed. So I think it's like the style of Rios is tailor-made for Pacquiao. And the other thing, like David Haye, his shoulder just underwent surgery, so his fight with Fury is off. And him and Deontay Wilder were talking on Twitter of having a fight. So what are the chances of that fight happening next?
Well, Azeem, first of all, I think, again, we referenced this earlier, there's a reason why Top Rank chose Brandon Rios when it was all said and done. They thought this was the perfect rehabilitation fight in many ways. He's been on HBO. He's been on Showtime. He brings a Latin constituency, specifically from the West Coast, and he's a reliable name. But stylistically, yes, I do think that it's very favorable for Manny, but we don't know what physical state Manny's going to be in coming off that devastating knockout. And Gabe, as it relates to David Haye, didn't he effectively announce his retirement today based on his shoulder surgery?
They've been told, I don't know if it's officially retired, they've been told that they should, or it's been recommended to them that they should based on the injury and everything that's involved with it. So I don't know if it's like hard, fast, is it press conference time? We'll see. I mean, even like, I think it was Ron Lewis of The Guardian wrote about it, but it was like, if this is real, if he's retired, we should look back on his career. So I think there's kind of a back door there, and I think that's why, you know, Fury kind of looks at it like this was never going to happen. This is BS, you know. So I don't know what to make of it. I think in the next couple of days we'll know exactly what, if there's an official announcement. But as long as they leave that, it's been recommended to retire, that kind of makes it a little suspect. But who knows? Haye is inactive at best. I think it's time that boxing moves on without him until he decides he wants to be a part of it.
Azeem, I have a question for you. I know the nightlife in Omaha is unbelievable, and there's a lot of things to do out there. Are you going to be ordering Pacquiao Rios this weekend on pay-per-view?
No, there's like actually a couple of bars which show like pay-per-view fights. So I'll be going to one of those bars and watching the fights. Like, unfortunately, they didn't show the Marquez-Bradley fight, but pretty much most boxing pay-per-views are shown here. So
Okay. Well, you will be watching the fight. That's the bottom line.
Yeah, I'll be watching the fight for sure.
Okay. Azeem, thank you for the call.
Thanks a lot, guys. Have a good one.
Thank you. You're here with Steve Kim and Golden Gate Gabriel Montoya, 347-215-7598. Gabe, a couple of news and notes here. A couple of careers I think are flagging or declining at best. Nonito Donaire, according to Arum, he's not going to return in March. He's going to return in May. He might have an injured orbital bone from the fight with Victor Chinian. Gabe, I'm just going to say it again. I think we've already seen the best of Nonito Donaire. I think when he starched Montiel in eye-opening fashion at the beginning of, I believe, 2011, we didn't know it then, but it looks like now that was the absolute apex for the Filipino Flash.
Yeah, it's kind of strange. I mean, I just think maybe the desire kind of dropped off. Hit 30, things changed, had a kid, he got married. So maybe, you know, maybe it's, you know, and none of those are negatives. You know, that's all great. I just am curious. I think maybe the desire dropped is what died. So, maybe this is the best. I mean, the little guys kind of age fast anyways, don't they? I mean, they usually 31 and 30 is kind of getting old for a smaller weight class guy. And it's just interesting. I mean, watching his career, looking back at it, not that it's over, but maybe the peak is. I can't help but think what would have been had he not kept getting in his way promotionally, switching companies, kind of locking himself up in litigation for long periods. And there was these stretches where he just wasn't fighting. And then there was just kind of inconsistency overall. He hit that peak, and then it was, particularly the last two fights, just kind of erratic training is from what I understand. I don't know. It's an interesting career.
Gabe, when he beat Montiel, I think it was safe to say his stock was as hot as any fighter in boxing. I mean, he was a blue-chip stock, right? And then literally 2-3 weeks after, I remember this press release from Golden Boy and Team Donaire that he's going to Golden Boy. And I remember at the time, Bob Arum had a fight for him, I think somewhere in up north at the Cow Palace or in San Jose, where he was going to fight the very respected Anselmo Moreno. So in other words, Bob was thinking, hey, we're going to strike while the iron is hot. Meanwhile, Donaire and his team said, well, we're going to go in another direction. And you saw what happened, Gabe. The mojo's never been the same because they were in litigation. All of a sudden, he was forced to go back to Top Rank. They didn't fight until October, I believe, of that year, and they faced Narvaez. And that was a fight where he went from being one of the most exciting fighters in the world to a fighter that started getting booed on a regular basis. It just goes to show you, fighters should just fight. Trust your management, stop playing the games, and concentrate on your doggone career. And speaking of which, Yuri Gamboa, he was arrested last week for domestic assault. Gabe, is that a one-way ticket to Bolivian on the Greyhound that this Cuban has?
Well, yeah, I think he just has been on that. You know, I saw him at the fights at in the Garden, you know, when we were there for Triple G. And I was like, oh, I totally forgot you existed. You know, like, where did that guy go? And he was a guy that is another one that kind of makes me look at, like, pound-for-pound list. Like, could that, you know, let a career happen. Let it actually marinate and come to fruition before you start labeling guys as you know, division killers, this, that, and the other thing. To me, he never really quite got out of that show-me mode. You know, like, he was kind of not like a prospect, because that's not fair to him, but I still hadn't really seen him in a meaningful fight. All I've seen him is pull out of fights, and now this. Yeah, I just think the career is – people look at James Kirkland. Somebody was saying, well, what a waste of talent, just like James Kirkland. James Kirkland's got a fight schedule, and it's not with the court of law. Gamboa, I mean, since being named in Biogenesis, this is the next level to which he's fallen. Yeah, that career, Bolivian indeed.
Yeah, it wasn't that long ago, probably about a year or two. He was supposed to fight Brandon Rios instead of Richie Abril at 135. He had basically verbally or texted and agreed to a deal. He backed out. And it's been a strange journey because then I believe the Top Rank got bought out of the contract by 50 Cent. And then his return to the ring is under a Top Rank show where Bob Arum not only got a check, a big check from what I've been told from Gamboa and 50 Cent, and then they get his services the next fight. It's been one of the most puzzling careers, and that was a classic case of everyone, all these forecasters, jumping on a bandwagon because of his reputation, some early highlights, but there hasn't really been a definitive, really long-lasting career here. I don't know where Gamboa goes, and quite frankly, I don't think anyone really gives a damn. Gabe, I understand we have a call. Let's get to it.
Okay. In the 8:05, you're live on the next round.
Hey, it's Marco from Chumash Country.
Marco, how are you?
Good, man. How are you guys?
Doing well here on a Monday night.
Very cool. I wasn't aware of the time change, so when I called in, it was like everything was underway. So I don't know how much you guys covered this, but the Andre Ward fight.
Go ahead. Let us know what you thought of him.
Okay, well, let me just focus on that newly repaired shoulder. I know it's his first fight after it was repaired, but didn't really seem to make a difference. I don't think he threw it and used it any more than he normally would. But here's the thing. I think it's just kind of one of those, and it's kind of a bigger issue for a lot of fighters these days that come up and pretty much start boxing, you know, with their lead hand being their, you know, their power hand, you know, their main hand, their righting hand, or however you want to say it, you know, coming forward. I think that's just, I think it's a real shame in boxing right now when that kind of stuff is kind of nurtured, you know, I don't want to say infancy, but from the very beginning, and kind of allowed, because really what you're doing is you're kind of pigeonholing yourself without really without really knowing it, and you by and large become, for the most part, a one-armed fighter for a lot of your career. It wasn't like it was in the old days where everybody expected to be orthodox because, you know, you just couldn't get fights if you were a southpaw. I mean, look at Carmen Basilio. But Carmen Basilio had an excellent straight right, and he utilized his right hand. You almost didn't know he was a natural left-hander. And that was pretty much the way it was back then. But nowadays, it's almost become kind of a crutch, in a way, and Andre Ward will never be a complete fighter, I don't think, largely to me, because of that. What do you
Marco, quick question. I respect Andre Ward for what he does. He wins. I've always said he does as good a job as winning fights round by round, laying brick by brick, 12-round decision at the world-class level as anybody. But there's a flip side to it, and Larry Merchant always talks about it. Are you entertained when you watch an Andre Ward fight? Marco.
it was entertaining to see Edwin Rodriguez's head snap back constantly from a jab. That was kind of fun. But other than that, no, not really.
And that's interesting that you talk about that. It is it's a fighting philosophy, the putting the power up front. The Philippines actually does it a lot where they switch guys. You see a lot of southpaws come out of there because that philosophy is to put the power up front. And so they put that right hand up front. The style of martial art, Jeet Kune Do does it. And it actually, I think it comes from the punch that he was using. I call it, it's called the straight lead. And Jim Driscoll originated it, and Jack Dempsey also used it. And that's where Bruce Lee stole it and put it as the main punch in his arsenal. And you're right. I mean, you can really smack somebody with that lead, especially leaping off of it, pushing off with your feet the way Andre was doing. It's a great punch. But you're right. It's like once it tames somebody, okay, and then what? Are you going to bring something from the rear? Are you going to finish this guy off? And I think, I mean, Andre uses all his hands, but he doesn't really have that knockout power. I mean, the last guy he stopped was Chad Dawson, and Chad Dawson almost got stopped the week before in sparring because he was having trouble with the making weight. So it is interesting. I mean, I think he is kind of like a hell of a technician, but he's almost like an ultimate, like, amateur in a sense, in that he fights in a way that doesn't lead towards breaking a guy completely down and knocking him out, but more technically dominating him throughout the whole thing. Not to call Andre an amateur, but I think the point's clear.
Right, and I think, I mean, all we have to do is look at current history, right? A guy like Virgil Hill, who was an excellent amateur, but by and large, for 80% of the beginning of his career, he was pretty much a one-armed fighter.
No,
left
he was.
First.
He was what you would call a slot machine because he was a one-armed bandit. But there was a difference with Virgil Hill. He had unbelievable backing in Bismarck, North Dakota. So they could fight the guys like Mike Peake, Tyrone Frazier. I remember many a night during my early high school days, or actually all throughout my high school days at Montebello High School on Sunday nights, watching him in Bismarck packing the house. And so he had a certain amount of support where eventually he could fight a guy like a Tommy Hearns. I think with Andre Ward, there's a bit of a conundrum here. Nobody is doubting his skills or his accomplishments, but as it relates to pay-per-view stardom or being that megastar, you have to have a bit of a curating. You got to have a certain likability. And quite frankly, Andre Ward, you know, I don't care what anyone says, I think he's about as unlikable as they come. There's no warmth there. You really have to be a guy that appreciates that style of boxing to like Andre Ward. And I think that's the overall drawback in terms of the SOG.
Agreed.
Yeah.
And so, Gabe, real quick, I don't think he's ever going to become that kind of a superstar because you have to have, you know, outside of your style, you have to have something outside the ring to sort of overcompensate for that. And he doesn't seem to have anything that would, you know, nurture a following, really.
It's true, and he doesn't have knockout power. Boxing fans follow one of two things. But look at Pauly Malignaggi. He's as colorful and probably as popular, recognized in the game as any boxer out there, really more so. He doesn't have knockout power. What he does is have style, and he's got his willingness to risk in there. For a guy with power, he fights like a guy that could knock you out with a punch. He gets in there, and he's action, and he's colorful outside the ring. He's even more colorful with the weigh-ins. Andre doesn't really do that. It's about excellence, and I think it's always going to be about long-term with him that will affect the career, maybe late in the career, like Hopkins. People will really start to celebrate him. But even then, I mean, Hopkins, nobody actually, like, does the wave in a Hopkins fight. You know, you kind of look the skill. So I don't know where he's going to go or what he's going to do. I think he should have fought Lucien Bute and piggybacked off of somebody else's fan base a little bit and had all those people fall in love with him through his mastery. But he chose to not do that and then tell us why.
Marco, before we let you go, two questions. Are you ordering the pay-per-view this weekend, and who do you like in the main event?
Yes.
Okay, so you are buying the pay-per-view. Who wins Pacquiao-Rios?
Pacquiao-Rios, I just, you know what, seeing 24/7 and seeing, you know, the face-off, and by the way, note to HBO, don't do a face-off and don't try to contrive, you know, bad blood. Just kind of let it happen. Don't do a face-off if that doesn't exist before.
Oh,
otherwise,
Marco, I couldn't agree with you more. I like Max Kellerman. I know him well. I can't watch face-off. I can't do the dreary music, the ominous tone. I mean, not every fighter is Marvin Hagler. They don't all hate each other. This is really a business when you get down to it.
Exactly. I like Pacquiao here. I just see a little bit. I can't decide whether or not this is going to turn out like Hatton, you know, just a quick starching, or if it's going to be a long-term beating like a Margarito fight. I can't decide.
Okay.
But I see, yeah, but I definitely see one or the other scenario. I can't possibly see Brandon winning a fight where he can't have his way on the inside. And Manny's just not an inside fighter, straight up.
All right. Marco, listen, enjoy the fight this weekend. Call us next week, okay?
All right, fellas. Take it easy.
If you want to call in, we got about 15 more minutes left, 347-215-7598, at Gabriel_Montoya, at SteveMaxBoxing. Hey, here's a loyal listener, Linus SQ, with one of the great avatars in Twitter, which is actually Linus, but without the blanket. He says, guys, spot on, Steve. The bigger star HBO is making him out to be, the more unlikable he seems. The odd thing is, he was the likable American we were pulling for in the Super Six, wasn't he? Yeah, and I have a theory on that. Here's what happened. We didn't know that much about Andre Ward, Gabe. And he wasn't on Twitter.
Brutal. I think the Twitter really, you know, it was interesting because I got some backlash from his camp.
No, you're kidding me. Really? No.
It's shocking. But,
was
you know,
it something you said?
No, actually, that's my point. It was something Andre said. My whole article was his quotes. I mean, if you rip it out, every word by anybody other than Andre Ward in that piece, his words, I believe, outnumber everybody else's and the words that I wrote around it. I could be wrong. But you know, there's only one Victor Conte quote. He's just confirming something, illuminating an issue. And then Lonnie Shields was in it, and it, as it pertained to this issue. And Ward's words dominate the whole thing over several years, from 2011 to now. I support drug testing, but these are all the many reasons why I'm not doing it. And that's, you know, that's his right. I didn't call him dirty. I called him disingenuous. I think that's something different. And if anybody out there, you know, I don't want to sit here and be a journalistic tease, but if you think that's the only shot I've got, well, keep watching Max Boxing. We do have a few more calls.
Gabe, I understand we have a few callers. Let's finish this up here. Who's next on the queue?
In the 209, you are live on the next round. 209.
Hello. 209.
You know what? I was just tuning in and listening, guys, but now that I'm on.
The stage is yours. What's your name, by the way? Let's get to know each other.
And let me ask you guys something real quick, you know, because we got that pay-per-view coming up. But it seems of late that even with the pay-per-view for the opponent, you know, it's that old cliche saying, you can beat the man doesn't necessarily mean you become the man.
Mm-hmm.
Do you think that Brandon gets this win? With that, I just kind of find it hard to see him, if he does get the win, he goes to that next level of superstardom. What do you guys think?
No, I agree with you that he elevates himself, Gabe. But again, to be at the Pacquiao and Mayweather stratosphere, that is very, very rare. But no, if Brandon Rios wins, I think he is one of the main Mexican-American stars in this sport today.
There's no question. It would go through the roof. You know, and I think, correct me if I'm wrong, it seems like, you know, he's got all the Mexicans on his side. I think there's some people that don't think he's going to win, but he's got all of Mexico going, you know, get Pacquiao, get yours with Pacquiao, that the Marquez has. Yeah, if he wins, if he knocks out
Mexico's
Pacquiao.
Mexico's behind him on this one? Gabriel, you think Mexico's behind him on this one? Because here was my thought. If Brandon knew how to speak Spanish, would the fight really have ended up in China?
Yes, I do. Let me just jump in here because, number one, Manny does not want to pay Uncle Sam half his salary. And the Venetian, that whole corporation, is making this very, very worthwhile. Flat out, even if this pay-per-view doesn't do well, everyone involved is going to come out in the black because the casino drops on those days are going to be absolutely huge.
All right. Well, there you go.
So, question. Number one, are you picking Brandon Rios? And number two, are you buying the pay-per-view this weekend?
You know what? If Brandon Rios was the young and strong Antonio Margarito, I would have picked him. But he's not. Brandon Rios reminds me of the old Antonio Margarito. Really slow, methodical, predictable. Only knows how to fight on the inside. We've seen what happens when you have movement. And let's be honest, Manny's not going to be dumb enough to sit there in the pocket and shoot with him. And when he does, when Manny does shoot in the pocket, he shoots with different angles. I just see Manny just being a sharpshooter, doing exactly what Freddie Roach and his team wants him to do, which is look good on that night.
All right, but are you buying the pay-per-view?
I'm going to do what everybody else does. I'm going to stream it.
Oh, you know what? Thank you for your honesty. All right, thanks for the call.
All right.
Gabe, I understand we have another call on the line.
We do. The surprise Dave Duenas visit. That's crazy.
Clear the phone lines. Is this Dave Duenas?
Well, that was Dave. I don't think you recognize him.
Oh, that was Dave. Oh. All right, was that a marching band that just stepped through our doors? The hell was that?
Well, yeah, I think that was the 954. Apparently they were partying at a mariachi punk club. Let me pull up trying to look at the numbers that are not used. In the 707, you're live on the next round.
Hello, 707.
707.
And I guess not, Gabe.
Okay. In the 917, you're live on the next round.
Hello, 917.
And gone. Okay,
Gabe,
there you go.
Here's a tweet from Up Close and Personal at The Thong. For Steve, the first time you saw Manny Pacquiao at Wildcard, did you think he would become a Fortune 500? In other words, a franchise fight. I'll be completely honest. First time I saw Manny Pacquiao, I didn't even know I had seen him for a couple of months. He was at the wild card, and he was so anonymous and unknown.
Wow.
He was training out with the other young Filipino fighters, all these smallish guys from the Philippines, didn't speak much English. Boo Boy was there. I didn't even know who Boo Boy was. And the American debut that he made, folks, was on the Oscar De La Hoya Castillejo undercard. I think it was in May of 2001. At the wild card, and Freddie Roach says, hey, I'll see you in Vegas this week. You're going to the fight. And I go, yeah. I go, what are you doing there? He goes, I got Pacquiao, Manny Pacquiao, right? And I go, yeah, who the hell is he? He's that little guy I've been training. And I remember him working with a lot of Filipino. That's when the influx began. I'll be completely honest. I had no idea who the hell he was. I really didn't. If he would have punched me in the face with the Manila ice, I wouldn't have even known who the hell it was. So then the day before, me and Doug ended up going to the MGM Grand Buffet. One of the fighter camps had extra meal tickets. They said, here you go, you and Doug, and go eat. And as we were going to the MGM Grand Buffet, we saw Manny Pacquiao with one of the older trainers from the Philippines who had been around the camp for a while. I think Boo Boy was there and Manny Pacquiao sitting at a table like everyone else during lunch hour eating at the MGM Grand Buffet. And I said, oh, that must be that Manny guy that Freddie is referring to. Then the next night, he basically absolutely ruined Lelo Leduaba, who a lot of people thought was going to be the next Azuma Nelson. And at that point,
yeah.
Gabe, a star was born.
That's crazy. And at that point, I wasn't even a boxing writer, but I actually remember the next night watching Pacquiao destroy Lelo Leduaba with my brother Tom, who is like the big boxing fan that kind of kept me connected to the game. And he was a big Freddie Roach fan. He didn't know about Manny Pacquiao either. Nobody did at that point. But I remember him saying, whoa, he's got Freddie Roach in his corner. I bet you this guy's good. And then he destroyed Lelo Leduaba. So, yeah, that's kind of crazy. That's the first time I saw Manny Pacquiao way up when I was living in Sacramento.
I remember right after the fight, one of the press conferences, and the press conference used to be at the MGM Grand on, like, where the last row of seats were. It wasn't actually in the media center. They had another area where they used for the post-fight presser. I remember Larry Merchant mentioning to me, after De La Hoya had kind of gotten his way through a 12-round decision against Castillejo. He said, Steve, I think we saw one of the best pound-for-pound fighters in the world. His name is Manny Pacquiao. And it was actually at that point I used the term Pac-Man in a column or my wrap-up article for that fight. And to this day, there are people that actually think I created the nickname the Pac-Man, but I've always said, Gabe, listen, I'm not that creative or that smart. Someone had to have used Pac-Man before. There has to be Pac-Man video games in Manila somewhere, okay? Before we go, Toby Robinson, at King T Dog says to me, Steve, who you got for the Cardinals versus Pats, please? I'm unsure whether to go over under 46.5 and or Cardinals minus 3, Pats plus 3. I think he means Carolina, because I see Cam Newton warming up here on my television screen. You know what? I don't know who's going to win the game, but I like the Carolina defense, and I don't know if Carolina's going to score that much. I would actually go the under 46.5. Gabe, any thoughts on the weekend coming up here before we wrap it up?
I'm just excited to see what Bacow is going to be like, and I'm curious because, however it goes, I wonder if we're going to see – people are already saying, well, he could fight Floyd. They're already talking about what Manny's going to do next. I'm just wondering if this is the big fade into China. So I'm really curious to see how they pulled it all off, what it's going to look like. Is it going to be logistically that much different than your normal telecast? And the Groves fight I really think is the gem of the weekend, man. I just can't wait to see what George Groves has in store. Because when this fight was signed, I was like, I got a feeling about that George Groves kid. I just think – he's going to be that guy.
Yeah.
That's my
I think that is the best pure matchup on paper going into this weekend. Well, Gabe, there it is, our first foray at 7 p.m. Eastern. From now on, folks, this is our start time. We're going to go 90 minutes approximately each week. I want to thank everyone that joined us, made this show possible. So on behalf of Gabriel Montoya and the rest of Max Boxing and the Leave It in the Ring radio network, till the next round, goodbye, everybody.